90.7 FM in Amherst, New Hampshire. This is Taxpayer Radio, sponsored by the Coalition of New Hampshire Taxpayers. We are dedicated to the principle that people paying the bills should have some say in how the money is spent. Good government is government you are involved in. So you can contact us at www.cnht.org. Call us and get involved.
And you're listening to the first hour of NHTR. It's Thursday, April 10th, 2008. And New Hampshire Taxpayer Radio is heard every Thursday at 6 p.m. on WLMW 90.7 FM, which reaches the greater Manchester area. And if it doesn't reach you that way, you can hear us with live streaming on your computer with a link you can find at our website at nhtaxpayerradio.org or cnht.org. The streaming is up and running, and we're recording, and we'll post the file shortly on the radio website, as well as we are listed in iTunes, podcast, and audio.com. We're the Coalition of New Hampshire Taxpayers, a nonprofit grassroots taxpayer advocacy group, and we're located at 136 North Main Street in Concord, just across from the State House. And if you're looking for a local taxpayer group to join, you could start with our links page where we have a listing of such groups, and if there isn't one, you might want to start one. And we'll be here with two commercial-free hours of live talk radio covering everything in New Hampshire and more. And if you'd like to send us your questions or comments, you can use the instant messenger method. And our handle on that is CNHTRADIO. And you can also email us anytime at webmaster@cnht.org. And I am Jane, and I will be picking up those messages. The opinions expressed here are those of the individuals who appear on the program and not necessarily the opinions of CNHT, the station, the network, or the Amherst Christian Church, who allows us to use their studio. You can look for the upcoming events on the nhlibertycalendar.org. One of the events we'd like to promote between now and then is the July 5th Celebrate the Pledge Hopkinton Picnic, and we expect to have a lot of candidates there. And next week, we don't have a guest this week, I don't think. We may contact some people by phone, but next week we've invited candidate for executive council in District 5, Stephen Stepanek. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, and he is from Amherst, and we've been in contact, so next week or the week after we can expect him. So once again, I'm Jane, and I'm here with your host, the chairman of the Coalition of New Hampshire Taxpayers, the ubiquitous Ed Nail.
Hey, Jane.
Hello. It's not even spring summer yet, and it's about 100 degrees in the studio. So I hope you have something to drink.
Yeah, I brought, I got something here somewhere. The desk is so cluttered now. Oh, I was sitting here reading my the websites and reading newspapers, getting ready for the program, and I go into a choking spasm just when it's my turn. So here we go. I'm going to grab the hearty swig of Diet Coke.
I know, that's always the worst.
Complete with sound effects. I heard something about carbonated soft drinks. Diet soft drinks are supposed to give you heart attacks now. How much stuff has to be in a soft drink to harm you that much?
Well, I think it's the method of carbonation in combination with fats and oils.
And global warming.
Does something
to
you.
And acid rain and snail darters. I'm getting tired of it. Oh, boy, what's his
name? If you're tired of that, you don't want to send your kids to the public school because that's what they're learning.
Yep. Yeah, everybody knows that. Let me see. I got a little list of things, but we should probably start off with, and I may try and call during the break at 7 o'clock, call the Windsor town, the town of Windsor, and get in touch with our Windsor Coalition taxpayer heroes up there in that little town of 230 people, because this week the Windsor powers that be, that's the nincompoops that run the town, and their goofy attorney Paul Apple of the Upton and Hatfield law firm, have received a letter from the Department of Revenue Administration under RSA 21J:20 ordering them to audit their town. And I'm going to tell you, these guys, there's only four people there now that are active in the taxpayers group that say, okay, we are part of the taxpayers group. There's other people in the group. And which is almost always the case. But there are four primary, what we call them, guilty parties that have been doing this. And it's, I'm going to name their names. Evan Charlotte Chamberlain, and Don and Irene Palmer. These four. Now, there's summer people that come up, and there's other people that are supporting them quietly, and they have a host of friends in this little tiny town. But the four, these four people have been doing the bulk of the work. They're like a little freedom platoon that's been turned loose on this community.
And thankfully that, you know, we have somebody that took up the cause.
We have to have somebody who lives in the town.
If not for them, who?
Nobody. Because it's in the town of Windsor, the votes, it's a small town, 230 people. I don't know how many registered voters, but the votes are 55-33. 55-33. If you said, I make a motion that we hang Eb Chamberlain, the vote would be 55-33. And they would promptly carry him out and try and hang him. Well, Eb would fight him off. But and Charlotte would drag him out of the building and give him a good run.
How disconcerting is it to think that you can go to the town hall and pay your taxes and maybe it won't get recorded?
Well, that's what's been happening. Well, we had, for a rundown of what's been going on, if you haven't been listening to our program, we've been working with the town of Windsor for 2 years. Because the first year we had the moderator told an independent film crew that we were associated with that they couldn't film inside the town hall during the town meeting. I mean, that's, everybody does that. All
yes.
Television stations, everybody does
that. I just posted files, now that you mentioned that, I just posted two very interesting videos on the Atkinson taxpayer.
Yeah, you can't keep a camera out. I mean, everybody knew that, and the town's attorney, Paul Apple, should have known that and should have told the moderator, yes, we're going to put the cameras in, write a letter to the group, or keep us out of court. But we went to court pro se, and we put a shine on Attorney Apple. So he comes back for more last year. The tax collector could not come up with a tax collector's report, which is required for the town report. At the end, you say, this is what I collected in taxes. It's how you set your tax rate. So something bad's been going on. So we got this little group together, and we waited 6 or 8 weeks, maybe 9 weeks, and we took the town to court for the tax collector's report. And they fought, and they fought, and we went to court, and the judge ordered it to be given to the group. And not only that, in the courtroom, she told the town they were going to pay the court costs for Eb and Charlotte and Don and Irene. So that's the way it goes. When a judge tells you you're going to pay the court costs of the opposing party, you lose. That's like fighting with the Indians, and they're on their horse, and they have your scalp in their hand, and you say, I won. No, no, no. If the Indian has your scalp, he won. There's no ands, ifs, or buts. So the Windsor Coalition of Taxpayers have a whole belt full of scalps. They have a stack of scalps. If you've ever seen Paul Apple, you know they got his scalp. So he doesn't have a lot in the hair department up on his top of his shiny head. So anyway, this has been going on. So we've been following a pattern of helping this group. They come to a point where they have to write a letter, or what's the next step in this process? And we'll say, well, the next would be this statute or another right-to-know request, contact the law firm, contact the state, contact the AG's office. Well, there's been a lot of firsts in this deal. First of all, the town is so small, it doesn't have a police department, doesn't have a highway department, doesn't have a rescue squad, doesn't have anything to speak of other than these incompetent selectmen, incompetent tax collector, and a couple of other people that haunt the town hall. So we knew when we heard about this, we said, man, we don't have to mess around with a police chief or anything. We go right to the heart of the problem. The taxes aren't being collected, and it appears that some people, friends, relatives, whatever, are being given favors, don't have to pay their taxes. If somebody isn't paying taxes, you either have someone else pay more or you borrow or something. I think there's something been going on. But in any case, I went to the Department of Revenue Administration, I think on April 2nd last week. That was Wednesday last week with the Coalition of Windsor Taxpayers. And we had a real heart-to-heart talk with the people there at the DRA and told them, we've been through all kinds of trouble in this process. And we've asked you repeatedly to do something about it. As a Department of Revenue Administration, you set the town's tax rate. You cannot set the tax rate unless they've given you exposure to their finances. And these are called MS forms, municipal services forms. There's an MS-61, which is the tax collector's report to the state. MS-65s, MS-1, MS-2, you don't need to know what they all are, but they are, it's like when you turn in your IRS, when you do your taxes, you put them on a form, a W-2s and all this other nonsense. Well, the state requires it, and apparently they have been requiring it from the town for a long time. So the other day, this letter is dated April 1st, so apparently this letter went out the day before we had our final meeting with the DRA. What spurred a lot of this is a front page article in the Boston Globe, and it was entitled Leniency's Math Chills New Hampshire Town, which is a pretty good title for it, because leniency on the taxes means you're putting neighbor against neighbor. So we had that. It spurred a little action because the people at the DRA, the Attorney General's Office, lawyers, a lot of people in the state read the Boston Globe. Probably the people we don't normally associate with, the powers that be that we hang around with. But the other side got to see this on the front page of the Globe. In fact, a gentleman who has a home, summer home, in Windsor contacted the Windsor Taxpayers Group and said, yeah, look at this. The town tried to charge me twice for my taxes and sent them copies, copies of the check, copies of the town's responses. The town doesn't know we have that, unless they're listening to WLMW 90.7 FM. I think they're busy up the town hall shredding right now. I don't think they're listening to our radio program.
Well, it isn't that we love taxes so much and we want you to pay more, but if you do pay your taxes, there should be some equitable and fair way of keeping the records so that you are not swindled out of the...
It's all statutory.
You know, it's
follow the law. If you're a selectman, you don't get elected king. You're a selectman. You administer the statutes, and you run the town.
Disconcerting to think they could not get the receipts in order.
Well, here we go.
Simple bookkeeping.
The state, for the first time in my in anyone's not memory, has ordered the town of Windsor to get audited. And here's the letter. April 1st. How appropriate. April Fool's Day is the day they got the letter mailed to them. Town of Windsor. To the selectmen, Gerald Needham, Darlene Cuddy, and Thomas Carlson. They're the three nitwits that are running the town. At 14 White Pond Road, there's only two roads in Windsor. One goes in, it goes left and right and stops. That's pretty much it. It's a big T. RE, audit on motion of commissioner pursuant to RSA 21J20. Dear governing body, and I use that term lightly, has recently come to my attention that there has been a history of continuing issues with respect to the internal controls and critical books, records, and documentation necessary for the town officials to fulfill their fiduciary duties to the citizens of Windsor. Since as early as 1986, that's 1986, the Department of Revenue Administration has notified the town of issues concerning town officials holding conflicting positions, duties, in violation of state law. Since as far back as 2002, the department has been recommending the town obtain an audit from a certified public accountant to no avail. The issues specifically revolve around the town officials' duties to accurately track and maintain accounts payable and accounts receivable. I'll have to explain that to these guys first. Such issues include, but are not limited to, record keeping, documentation of monies accepted, applied, location of records stored, alleged overspending of the town budget, payments to the school of budgeted money 1 year in arrears, transferring of budgeted funds to line items that had not been properly appropriated, depositing of funds pursuant to statute, liening of property for delinquent taxes, handwritten adjustments and abatements to property tax bills, inconsistencies in information filed on the MS-61, the one I mentioned a little while ago, beginning of the year taxes, resident taxes failing to match the prior year's end of year's resident taxes, contradictory information of property tax amount committed to the tax collector, which did not match the amount of commitment as determined by the department, and unexplained fund balance decreases in years where total revenues were greater than expenses. And pretty much they hit every single letter in the alphabet there, didn't they? Here we go. I have enclosed copies of relevant correspondence from the department to you for your reference. Given the long-term acute issues that continue to permeate the town's record, the town's failure to comply despite the department's prior correspondence, the department demands immediate action. Accordingly, pursuant to authority vested in me under RSA 21J20, you are hereby ordered to engage the services of a qualified certified public accountant. That doesn't mean your uncle, your nephew, your brother-in-law, or your pal down the road with a gas station, and receivables. A letter from a firm must be in place by April 30th, 2008, with an audit compiled not later than June 1st, 2008. In light of the unique nature of such an audit and the something or other ends of why I was blushed out. By this matter, the department requires that you submit the proposed engagement letter to me for review and approval prior to beginning the audit. That takes the monkey out of monkey business, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Sure, you can appreciate the seriousness of this situation. I need to do, and the need to do the right thing by the citizens of Windsor. Therefore, I remain optimistic that I shall see real action, not just action, real action on the part of the board to seek out an appropriate audit, which will give the department, the board, and the town's taxpayers a clear record of the town's state of affairs. Can you spell dismal? Thank you for your anticipated cooperation. That's how we usually end our request for 91A. Thank you in advance for your cooperation. Ooh. Thank you for your anticipated cooperation in this matter. Should you have any questions to discuss this further, please contact me. Sincerely, G. Philip Blatzos. He's the commissioner of the Department of Revenue Administration. Guess who he sent the letter to? Paul Apple, Esquire, certified mail, return receipt requested. That doesn't come in the letter. It's like, Paul, you have to sign this and prove you got it, and send it back. Karen A. Schlitzer, whatever, Esquire, Assistant Attorney General, Glenn Perlow, Esquire, Assistant Attorney General, Paul Broder, Chief Investigator, Attorney General's Office, Barbara Robinson, Director of Municipal Services of the DRA, and Sandra Rourke, Municipal Accounts Auditor, Municipal Services Division. So when one, two, three of the five people you sent your letter to are at the Attorney General's Office, might be time to get an audit done. So it's funny, this letter went out April 1st. They must have gotten it the 2nd or 3rd or whatever. I was up there in Windsor talking to the Chamberlains last Sunday. That town hall had three cars parked in front of it, and they were there almost all day.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine they have some sort of liquid nitrogen cooling their shredding machine. And there's a lot of panic going on inside that little building. So we have this heroic little group in Windsor who have blazed a trail for other like-minded, you know, potentially like-minded groups in our state. It is not easy to pull this off. I've been through it. Jane, you've been through it. Almost everybody that we know who's a political activist has said, gee, if they only followed the law, like the state law, it would be great. Almost anything. Special meetings, elections, complaints you make to departments. The departments think, the first thing they do when they see you coming is, how can I get rid of this peasant with mm-hmm. a petition?
Well, they manipulate it, too, to, use it to their advantage sometimes.
Yeah, just here you come. You say, well, I live in town. I pay my taxes. They keep going up. We vote for things, and they don't do it. We vote against things, and they do it. Where do I go next? Oh, boy, gee, the DRA wishes they could help you. And the AG's office tells you, we're so busy. You know, we have so many other things to do. Well, I know some of the things that both of these departments do. They have time for this.
They really don't understand if a sign is political or not, so I really don't see a purpose in going to them.
Yeah, we've been to the AG's office repeatedly with stuff, and you know, when you walk in a room and they got those blinders on like a horse wears to make it go straight, you know you're in trouble. And you come in with voter fraud. Well, that's not voter fraud. Well, wait a minute. We have 19 people from out of state register same day in the town of Deerfield and vote from a location that does not exist on a road that does not exist. That's not voter fraud? Well, it's trickier than that. You know, I mean, everybody has a right to vote. Do they have a right to vote from a non-existent home on a non-existent road when they're from New York and New Jersey and somewhere? 19 of them. 19 votes in a town is enough to flip something.
It certainly is. So apparently, if we're not going to have oversight by the AG's office, it's up to you people to get out there and keep your town officials honest.
And if you can't do it, like in Windsor, the vote is 55 to 33. It might be 10,000 to 5. You are never going to cross that threshold. So until the AG's office comes in and either handcuffs somebody or scares them into saying, okay, here's where we made a mistake. They either have to say, we don't know where the money is, we don't know what happened, or we're so stupid, we don't know what we're doing, but I'm quite sure the auditor can figure out that we cashed in CDs or we did something stupid because of lack of knowledge. Like, you know, holding conflicting positions. You can't be a selectman and be the auditor and be the trustee of the trust funds. You can't hold offices that are mutually exclusive of each other. You can't be the treasurer and the selectman. So they don't understand those simple things. I imagine the bookkeeping gets a little complicated as well. So anyway, this little group, this little Freedom Platoon from Windsor. The Chamberlains and the Palmers have done a fabulous job. And I imagine there are going to be some cookouts on the grill when the summer people come back to Windsor, which should be in about 3 weeks. The summer people are going to start drifting back the end of April, beginning of May. They'll be coming up, so they'll have some friends again in town, because right now it's a small town. Every morning when you get up, you drive past all the people that are heading up to the town hall with the heavy-duty two-speed 220-volt shredding machine, you know. So we're very proud of our group up there. We spent a lot of time on this when everyone else thought it was funny. You know, I go to these meetings with think tanks and lawyers and lobbyists and professionals. Every so often, I'm invited to these little meetings. Like, oh, gee, we're trying to figure out who would run for this office, and we're trying to figure out what would happen if this bill was passed. And, you know, everybody's trying to raise money for their nonprofit and get on board and work on somebody's campaign. And then there's me. You know, I represent the grassroots. So they'll say, okay, Ed, what do you have? And I'll say, well, the town of Windsor. And, ha, 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 that town's so small. Well, if you live there, it's a big deal to you.
Of course it's a big deal.
And if the DRA, you know, is worth millions of dollars and has all these statutes and they don't enforce them, if they can't enforce them in Windsor, where are they going to do it? What's the purpose of having them? You know, if the deal is, let's iron it out by waiting at the side of the building with a club for your neighbor to show up at town meeting. Is that what it comes to? Do we have to, like, hire some gunfighters from out of town and come in and clean the place up? Do we have to burn our neighbors out, or do you have to turn a cattle stampede loose on them? What do you do if you cannot ever win the vote?
I don't know.
You're stuck. Well, actually, you call us, you know. But the main thing that broke this, I think, I was talking to Howard Dilworth about it last night, was the Boston Globe article. When it hits in the front page, not the page 10 or in the bomber pages, B-19, B-12, B-42, B-36, when it's on the front page, here's what we have, a front page story.
It's amazing because...
But we have a reporter. How often do you think that reporter gets her story on the front page of the Globe? Well, she did this time, and she's an opportunity to get his follow-up on there. Plus, like this guy down in Boston who owns a summer place in Windsor sends us details we never would have gotten otherwise.
Now, is he the one that didn't get, asked to pay his taxes twice?
Twice, yeah. They said you didn't pay your bills.
Because of faulty bookkeeping.
And then they sent him a penalty, interest penalty, on the, let's call it $2,000 or $3,000 or $1,000, whatever it was. They send him interest on top of that. So
now,
he says, wait a minute, here's my canceled check. You know,
oh,
you
okay,
guys
he did pay by
me.
A check.
Yeah, and he sent us the check.
Thank goodness for that.
Yeah, isn't that sweet? So this is, you know, when you send this thing off to the Globe, you've now, it was in the Union Leader. All right, big deal. Who reads that? There's 55,000 people. It prints 55,000 copies a day, I think, something like that. And some people just don't read that. But the Globe gets out there, and people are chatting about it, and it's not only just in New Hampshire. So it's always been our, you know, my big deal has been to stay away from the papers you can't trust. And we found we cannot trust the Union Leader to put a fair story in about our taxpayers' groups. So the Globe, what do they care? You know, it's a good story. It's a human interest story, and it's in there. So that was a good deal. The extra information we find out about it is a good deal, and it's not over yet. Because this reporter, if she has any sense of furthering her career, if she ever wants to know about something that's going on in any locality in the town, in the state of New Hampshire, where is she going to call? She's going to call us.
Us.
That's the way that it is. If she hears there's some statute, if she hears there's some mix-up, anything. What aren't we involved in?
Well, pretty much everything.
If it's at the grassroots level, we're pretty much know them, work with them, have some sort of relationship with them. That's just the way it is. And we have a radio program. And we might be cranking up the paper again. So there's emails, there's e-blasts, there's articles, there's websites. You just can't stop us from getting our news out. And people tune into it. So this is WLMW 90.7, FM, New Hampshire Taxpayer Radio. My name's Ed Nail, chairman of the Coalition of New Hampshire Taxpayers. And we're with Jane. She's working her laptop on the other side of the table and recording this for posterity. So right now we have, so I want to thank the Windsor Coalition of Windsor Taxpayers for winning this. It's basically over. It can't go wrong now.
No.
It's pretty much you can put this thing to bed because there's going to be an audit. Here's the other thing. There's so much of this in the towns in New Hampshire recently, in the last 5 or 10 years, that the auditing firms have caught on. And they're auditing almost like you've heard of defensive driving. I think they're defensive auditing.
Yes.
Because they're asking people to sign waivers saying, I know of no criminal activity. You know, here's what
it's the scramble.
It's
what usually happens.
They're coming in saying, we are auditing under your request to audit specifically this. You know, and they're doing letters to the community saying, this is how we approach the audit. They're covering themselves because they don't want to look like the auditor in Newmarket, Newcastle. There was a finance officer and another financial person who pulled some stunts with the town's finances and left town. And the auditor apparently didn't catch it, and he's not answering calls, this guy from Canterbury. I don't think these other auditing firms want to wind up like the auditing firm from Canterbury, not able to pick the phone up and answer a reporter. So that's where we're at in New Hampshire. So timing-wise, it's a perfect storm. So good luck to the Windsor selectmen. If you haven't figured out you should resign and go away, well, don't let me be there to, you know, give you that suggestion. You just keep doing what you're doing because it's working really, really well. All right. What else do we have here?
Well, I have a little story about Atkinson.
Shoot.
They have started to film.
Oh, YouTube.
And we have a couple of videos on AtkinsonTaxpayers.org. And these videos are of the police chief before the selectmen. And one of the selectmen was really upset because apparently the chief took it upon himself to try to enforce the federal law that states you cannot put unstamped mail in your mailbox. They didn't want him to mention any names, but it just kind of spilled out that he said the woman's name. And upon further investigation, we find out that this woman is someone who is suing for $1 million because he had her physically removed from the selections meeting. So I think he was being a little selective about who he was chasing with his blue lights flashing because she was stuffing, you know, flyers probably for the town meeting in the mailboxes. And we all know that it's a law that you're supposed to put anytime you paper the town with flyers, you're supposed to put it. Yes, but it is the post office purview, and that's what the selectman kept trying to get across to him, that it's not your purview. And he claimed, well, it's a federal law, and he read the law, and he said, I'm here to uphold the law. And I thought, I wonder, you know, if it made any difference about who it was that he was chasing. But anyway, it's a very interesting video, and the people in Atkinson are pretty tickled because they didn't realize the technology was available to get that up on their front page. And
yeah, I think
it's right up there.
I almost ran into the police chief from Atkinson. I forget his name now.
It's
let's call him. There's Dopey, Sneezy, Sleepy, and whatever. I think he's out of his league. Somehow he's managed to become the police chief of Atkinson, but he's not a professional person. Let's put it that way. He's causes himself a lot of undue hardship by his uncontrollable actions. Well, I caught up with him one day. He was flying down 93 towards Atkinson from Manchester. He had a little old lady in a front seat, and he had a car that was the Atkinson Senior Citizens Transport Association vehicle or something like that.
Right.
He was doing 80, 85 miles an hour flying down the road in a 55-mile-an-hour zone. Eventually it was 65. I followed him until my car couldn't keep up with him. I have a 3-cylinder Geo Metro.
It's Philip Constantino. I know the name like the back of my hand, but I just couldn't.
Oh, he's a piece of work. I'm telling you, he's been in more lawsuits. He baits people he can't take criticism and not come back with the final insult. You know, he has to have the last word each time. So he's very easily manipulated. So he's caused a lot of trouble to the town. He's been sued I don't know how many times. And he's the thorn in the side down there. And eventually, this is a perfect vehicle to get video of him being himself and put that on the internet. That could be his demise. But what he's done is pretty clever. He's got this elderly transport vehicle, which is an old cruiser. It looks like a cruiser, but it's not. I thought it was a police cruiser flying by me until I saw Atkinson. I just took all. It took me a while to get in fifth gear and catch the guy. And then I called the Atkinson taxpayers from the car while I'm chasing him. I'm giving them a minute by, you know, blow by blow description of what's going on. We're going past mile marker 35. We're, you know, blah, blah, blah. We're in Londonderry. Here he goes. So they were, you know, and I wrote articles about it for New Hampshire Insider. And with the tools we have nowadays, like in Windsor, you had to use statutes, you had to use documents. But in Atkinson, they can actually use this clown's videos of himself acting like a dope in public and let him create his own tomb, let's say that way. It's hard to get rid of police chiefs. You really can't get rid of a police chief. They usually get rid of themselves by continuing to act like they do. So once you find one, it's not professional. It's just a matter of walking him towards the plank, and they usually willingly go, like the one we had there in Ware, Miles Rigney.
You know, this is the police chief that used to take my now-deceased aunt to the doctor, and so it was very difficult for me to convince my cousin that he's done anything, you know, that might upset people. But, I mean, if you from the Atkinson, town of Atkinson, and you look on their website, you'll see they've done a wonderful job of providing all the documents needed for you to build the story around what's going on in Atkinson. And what can I say?
Hey, I got a court case in yesterday in the mail. It was Chuck Douglas, who's an attorney down in Concord, Douglas, Leonard, and Garvey. Sent me this, and it's a United States District Court, District of New Hampshire. This is a federal case, and it's called Tom Sutliff versus Epping School District et al., and it's a civil suit. It's an appeal of a loss at the Supreme here in New Hampshire. It's 41 pages long. Do you want me to read it?
Well, I don't know if you should read 41 pages. We probably don't have time.
No, it is actually pretty nonsensical. It's an appeal of a court case. So it's really not about the merits of the case itself. It's how the case was conducted. And in this case, we have Tom Sutliff, who's one of our friends from Epping, was more than upset with the school and the town engaging in what's called in compelled speech.
Mm-hmm.
They spend thousands of dollars putting together flyers and mailing them out to people saying vote for this or vote against that, when your First Amendment rights in a town allow you to have part of any public display. So if there's a billboard up there in the town that says you can post your bills here, everybody's allowed to. It's the same thing. It's compelling Tom Sutliff to pay for their opinions with his tax dollars.
Right.
So he went to court with the school and with the town. And, you know, we met with him when he did the case originally pro se. So it was his own case. He's acting as his own attorney. And he was right. They were engaging in it. It's crystal clear what they were doing. But he put his case together and he brought it into New Hampshire court system, which is one of the, you know, I mean, you maybe find a worse court in Louisiana or Chicago, but we have a terrible court system here. It is biased. I mean, look at the judges. We've had to impeach Supreme Court judges for making deals over people's divorces. We have one judge right now that was falling asleep in court.
Is it Judge
Coffey? Her husband was a lawyer and was trying to, well, embezzled money from a lady with Alzheimer's. And then she tried to hide their money, their assets, so they couldn't be taken after his judgment when he was found guilty. So they remove her from the bench. They pay her regular salary, and she's making money part-time doing legal work in New York and wants to keep it. You know, while she's been removed from her position. It's just the way that it is. I mean, I don't trust them. There's very few good judges. We've had one of them actually in here. Very few good judges. Judge Lynn was the judge
That's
we interviewed
right.
here. Very few good judges. And it feeds on itself. It just gets worse and worse and worse because people say, well, gee, if that judge can do it, why can't I do it? Well, Tom brought his case, and he should have won right off the bat. He lost and had to appeal. And it's they didn't really, in the case, if I remember correctly, rule on the issues. They ruled about how he brought the case and, you know, just a lot of mealy-mouthed nonsense. So Chuck Douglas took the case to federal court, and in the end, they've won part of the multi-tiered deal. The town of Epping has a website, and they allow the pro spenders to put their links on the website, but they wouldn't let Tom Tardiff's group do that. And I forget the name of the group right now. I think it should be on the front page here someplace. But anyway, that's what they did. And he has EPRG or something like that's the name of his group. But his mistake was, or not his, I don't know if so much a mistake, but he mentioned a case that wasn't strictly governmental, like towns and things and schools. He mentioned a case about some beef companies and USDA or something. I don't know what it was. some federal program for marketing meat, which has nothing to do with citizens in a town voting on a school or town budget. But the judges used that to toss out some of his case. But there was no way around it with a website. So he's won that end of it. And they're going to come back to a New Hampshire court and say, okay, the website. Why does Tom Sutliff and his group have to surrender the names of all their members, their financial documents, and other information regarding their private nonprofit when no one else does? So the tax and spend citizens can put the links to their websites up there, and they're not asked to surrender financial data and the members of their group. You notice whenever you have problems, you have a taxpayer group in any town, the first thing the town wants and the news media wants, the names of everybody in it. It's the first thing they go after. Tell me the names of everyone in your group.
Oh, I know. I get requests like that all the time.
All the time. So that's the first thing. When you have someone say, I want to know who's in your group, right away, that person is your enemy, and just forget it. If they can't say, yeah, here, I'll give you the documents. Okay, yes, you can use our radio program. Fine, you can put your letter in with our letter.
And it doesn't work the other way around.
No. So we can't go to them and say, oh, by the way, tell me all the tax and spenders in town, because I know you have a telephone tree, and I know you have an email list. Like the school superintendents that email out to get out the vote from the town hall, from the SAU office the night before the election. They do an email, mass email to all the parents on their list. I can't use their list, but boy, don't they want to know who's in the taxpayers.
Well, they do.
Group.
I mean, even in Bedford, if you remember, the people who were pressing for high school attended our meetings. They attended our actual meetings of our taxpayer group, but we were barred at the door from coming in to see their group.
Yeah, and in Atkinson, the Atkinson taxpayers group was calling the Lawrence Eagle Tribune. And they said, Ed, it would be better if you talked to that reporter. And I said, okay, fine. So I, call her up. I said, I'm Ed Nam, I'm chairman of the Coalition for Taxpayers. We're working with Atkinson. Oh, yeah. Could you tell me who's in that group? Right off the bat, I said, no. She goes, well, why not? And I said,
some groups prefer to remain anonymous.
They get picked on. I said, especially with police chief. He's been sued and countersued and all this nonsense for years. I'm not going to do that. She goes, well, I don't know if I can do a story unless I have the names of the other people.
No, so, not true, because the other way around, can mention people who've done this, that, and the other thing and not say their names.
Well, she's fishing for the chief. I mean, the Lawrence Eagle Tribune is like every other paper.
Sure.
The chief gives them all their juicy stories. So who do you think they're going to favor? They're going to favor the guy who's calling them up and saying, hey, we caught a drug dealer. Oh, by the way, we're going to ask for a new cruiser. Oh, here's what something you might want to look at. Or here's the really skinny details from that arrest we made or that accident, but you can't say you got it from me. That's why they like the police chief more than they like the taxpayers group.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to go to him and say, hey, here's the six names. Here's the guys that are really running the show. I'm not going to play that game. We've seen that.
But on the other hand, we have a right to know what's going on in the government organizations, and they don't have the right to overcharge you for any of that information.
Well, that's what fries them, that they aren't completely autonomous from us. They have to respond to some of the stuff, and that really grinds them, because after they've been there, they have this entitlement attitude, like, I'm the chief, or I'm the fire chief, or I'm the town manager, or I'm the town whatever. How dare you ask me a question? Or, why do I have to answer this question again? Well, if there's 5,000 people in town, maybe every one of them has to ask you that question.
And so, therefore, people who are getting right-to-know information and posting it on websites are doing the town a favor, basically, because they're already providing it for the rest of the citizens. They don't have to go...
I like the
get
Atkinson,
it again.
The town has a new policy they've dreamed up of charging 50 cents a page. Okay, fine, 50 cents a page, and then they want to charge $15 an hour for something that's anything beyond their regular job, the town employee's regular job. Well, the right to know law says the town or school or the public entity shall make copies.
Right.
So 91A is part of your normal job. The, if it says you shall submit an MS-61 form.
To keep the citizens informed, if they request a document, don't let them bully you by telling you it's going to cost you so many millions of dollars.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is, I've told a story here before, when Wilton, New Hampshire, had the police chief, McGuire, that was in all kinds of trouble, smoking dope and assaulting people, and he's been in jail. Should be in jail now. He may have gotten out. I think his name was McGuire. In any case, he tried to hire someone to replace him when he was arrested or moved out of town that would keep hush-hush, you know, everything that happened. So I'm thinking, how in the world, the hire he made looked like it didn't conform with our policy or any normal policy. So I went to Wilton, and I said, hello, here's my card, here's who I am. I'd like to get a copy of your police policy. I'd like to look at it and get copies. Oh, well, the first copy is $5, and every other one after that is $1. And the police department policy handbook is 99 pages, so you'll owe us $104. I said, oh, really? Can I see the manual? I looked. I said, oh, here it is right here. It was laying on the table all dismantled. So here's the solid handbook altogether, and here's the one that's out of the binder. So I went over to it, and I flipped it open. It says hiring policy. There was like 4 pages. I said, I'll take these 4 pages. Thank you very much. And they left. Oh, they were fried because they thought, I'm not going to drop $104 for a lousy procedure.
And you didn't want the whole manual. You wanted just that section.
All I really needed was the pages. I don't care to look at their stupid manual. I've seen plenty of them. I've helped write them up. So, but they thought, oh, we're just going to turn him around. He's going to balk at $104. He'll be gone. He'll be out of our hair. And then I asked a few other questions, like, who's your auditor? Do you have an RSA 32 budget committee elected under statute? And who's your town attorney? And who's your assessor? And when's the last time you were assessed? And that kept them busy as well, because now they're thinking the police policy thing is minor after you start asking them who their auditor is, who their assessor is, when's the last time they were assessed. That brings another, let's say, a layer to the cake. So I left. You know that red phone at the police chief's house is ringing. Oh, there's some guy in here looking for public policy or your police department policy. We read that here on the program and went over and over and over that. We were pounding on the Wilton police until that issue was finally resolved and they got another chief in there. That was a mess. And the guy had been a crook for years. I think he was arrested and they had him on probation. He was not to go have any contact with some woman that was involved in this, and he goes to Walmart with her. Excuse me.
Really?
He got arrested and I think went back to jail. It was a disaster. See, I wish we could find that cough button Howard's always talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is. It's white. There we go. Did you know this, Jane? There is a exit delay. That's a yellow button.
Mm-hmm.
Next to it is the start delay. That's mm-hmm. the green button.
Yeah.
Next to it is the cough button. That's white. And the other one is called it's red. It's called the dump profanity button. So if you were to get, you know, a profanity-laced sentence going, I could dump that right off the bat.
But you know I would never do that.
Actually, I don't ever use those buttons. But every so often I look over there and go, dump profanity. Interesting. If you don't engage in it, you don't have to dump it. This is WLMW 90.7 FM, New Hampshire Taxpayer Radio. My name's Ed Nail. I've got a cold my wife brought home from work for me. It's been trying to kill me since Monday. I thought I had it whipped. I had it for about a week. It was tickling and wrestling with me and sneaking up behind me and stuff. And then all of a sudden, Monday, around 9 a.m., I was headed for a job down in Epping. I was going to go work on a job down there. I almost fell asleep at 9 o'clock in the morning driving down there. Stopped in Henniker, and I was going to turn around. And I got a phone call, and after the phone call, I felt a little better and went all the way down. But I've been dragging. Here it's Thursday, so I should be done by Sunday, hopefully. So I got Tom Sutliff, and let me see what else we have. We have it's 7:15.
We had a press release from the New Hampshire Advantage talking about the taxes spending us into a deficit. Lynch leaves the door open to new taxes, and I could read that if you'd like. It's not too long.
Yeah, go ahead. I have something to match it.
A few paragraphs. This is a group, New Hampshire Advantage Coalition.
One minute. I'm one of the directors.
They're watching taxpayer issues, income tax caps, that sort of thing. In his February 2007 budget address, Governor Lynch stated, working together, Democrats and Republicans, we will enact an honest and balanced budget. A little more than a year and $500 million in spending later, New Hampshire faces perhaps the largest fiscal crisis since the early 1990s. Now, that's a big thing, the largest fiscal crisis since the early 1990s. Yesterday, for the taxpayers of New Hampshire, the news got worse. Despite facing higher costs for fuel, groceries, and an uncertain employment climate, Governor Lynch refused to close the door on new taxes. When a question was posed by a reporter at the State House, if new taxes were off the table, the governor refused to shut the door by saying, well, I'm going to be looking at everything. Now, keep in mind, he's threatened to veto any broad-based tax. He's taken our pledge. So we hope to hold them to that. Many New Hampshire residents are facing their own fiscal crisis at home every day. People all over the state have to make tough financial decisions due to the rising cost of living and an uncertain economic outlook. It's about time Governor Lynch and the leaders in our legislature realize this and pull back the reins of their out-of-control spending, said Mike Biondo, chairman of the New Hampshire Advantage Coalition. Last year, the legislature and the governor were warned that their spending levels were overly optimistic at best. Representative Norm Major, former chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, week was quoted as saying the revenue projections are irrationally exuberant and far too high. The citizens of New Hampshire shouldn't be asked to pay for the blind indiscretion of its leaders. State government should be required to live within its means, just like every taxpayer must, concluded Biondo. For more information, you can contact one of our friends, Roger Wilkins, at rwilkins@yourmeridian.com, if you'd like more information about the New Hampshire Advantage Coalition. And they're a group, as I said, that works on some of the same things we work on, and some of their people work with us.
Yep, I was with them today. Roger, Mike, and Nick. Let me see. Here's another little something. It's a press relief from the Josiah Bartlett Center, Charlie Arlinghouse, our buddy at the Josiah Bartlett Center, a little think tank. According to a new analysis by the Josiah Bartlett Center, state revenues are deteriorating, making the hole in the budget much larger than previously thought. According to the study's author, Charlie Arlinghouse, in each of the last 4 months, state revenues have fallen further and further behind the amount needed for the state budget. Revenues will end the year at least $91 million behind the budget, and even higher if business taxes also deteriorate. The two-year budget shortfall will be between $205 and $258 million. The study found non-business tax revenues had been in place on a pace to fall $48 million short in the current fiscal year and now tracking $91 million behind the budget. Arlinghouse cautioned that business taxes are currently slightly ahead of budget, but are expected to slow a little in the March quarterly collections. More than a third of all business taxes are collected in March and April. Those collections will have a significant impact on how bad the situation gets. Any shortfalls in fiscal year 2008 will create a lower base for 2009 and be compounded by the recession. Adding the recent deterioration to the January estimates of department heads, the revenue shortfall for the biennial budget will be between $205 and $258 million. A strong economic turnaround before the end of the year would improve the outlook, while a recession would make the numbers even worse. And the study is called State Revenue Deteriorating, and you can find it at www.jbartlett.org. And I think you can get the Josiah Bartlett Center's website right off the front page of CNHT. So the easiest one there is to remember is CNHT.org.
Right.
You just go into, just hit links.
As well as New Hampshire Advantage Coalition.
In the top bar, just hit links. And on the right-hand side, you'll find all the taxpayers groups that have websites. And you'll find featured sites like Charlie Arlinghouse's. And he's been, makes a very compelling case. He's been right more often than not. And he does a good job of this. So, and I'm actually going to get him to give me some of his books for our group. So everybody will have this when somebody says, what's going on with the state budget? Well, he's been saying this since May of 2007. That's when Charlie said we were heading into a softer economic times. You shouldn't be spending 17.5% more than you spent the year before. Hey, on April 26th, we're going to have a little celebration, the origins of the American Bill of Rights, at the Southern New Hampshire University, Webster Hall, room Mara Lecture Hall in Manchester on North River Road. Let me see. It's by the New Hampshire Center for Constitutional Studies. That's Diane Gilbert and her team. And I think, let me see, it's $45 per person, includes lunch, and I believe it's, what else is in there? It's a, includes lunch, walk through each amendment to the Bill of Rights to understand their meaning and to get the root of concern they were intended to address. This course is open to all age groups, particularly appropriate for those wishing to be reconnected to the origins of the Framers' Constitutional Republic. Registrations close April 21st, 2008. Seating is limited. Seminar to start promptly at 9 a.m. No refunds after April 21st. Let me see. You can contact her at, I'll give you a phone number. You can register by telephone. This is real easy. 679-2444. 679-2444. And you can always get a hold of the New Hampshire Center for Constitutional Studies. They are linked on our website. So if you wanted to contact...
Now, what's the date on that again?
It's April 26th. It's coming up.
That's right. I have it right here. Bill of Rights Workshop.
Webster Hall and the Mara Lecture Center on North River Road in Manchester. 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. So it's an all-day deal. And running for office, your registration could be free. How's about that?
That's very interesting.
Yeah. She would like to, people who run for office to say, gee, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights mean this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot, you know, if you have informed people, at least a handful of them in the legislature, things would go a lot better. Let me see. What else? Registration closes. I got all that. So Diane's been putting these things on for ages. She's really good at it, and it's well worth going. Sounds like a lot of money, but where else are you going to... I mean, where else would you find out from educated people who make this their life's work, understanding the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, are constantly discussing
great.
It? Yeah. Where else are you going to find this stuff out? So it's the April 26th. You can catch it on the New Hampshire Center for Constitutional Studies on CNHT's website. Or call 679-2444.
Well, you know, they have, their website is nhccs.org. It used to be called the New Hampshire Center for Constitutional Studies.
Yeah.
But the name has been changed. It's called the National Heritage Center for Constitutional Studies, but it keeps the same. Initials so that the website and everything else is intact.
Yep.
And on the calendar, I have it listed, Bill of Rights Workshop, April 26th, and basically, rather than repeat all the information, I have it linked. I have it linked. But I had forgotten about the situation where if you are running, you're a candidate for state rep, this might be a good thing for you to attend.
Or talk somebody who's running into attending it.
Sure.
Jeez. You know,
it's just one more training session.
Yeah, and they're floating around this time of year. They're a good thing to go to. You always learn something. And, it's getting pretty close to
break time.
Out time here for the five-minute break for American Family Radio News. I have some more stuff from our buddy up in Laconia. Bob Kingsbury sent me a packet of information on the beleaguered county commissioners up in Belknap County, and it's a lot more complicated than I can explain in the short time we have. So I'm going to take what Bob Kingsbury, here's one of our directors, mailed me. I'm going to have to break it down into something understandable. It's a situation where the county commission, which is hard to explain, it's the elected state representatives in that county make up the county's commission. So it's basically a mini legislature, and they spend the money for the county. So they're in the state house spending money all day, and then they go and meet as a group from a specific county, and they put together the county's budget. Well, these county budgets are getting to be more and more and more money. So your tax bill, which is school, town, and county, the county portion is starting to creep up, you know, 15, 13, 17, 20%. So people are starting to notice that, and we're going to start to have to cover more of these county expenses. And something unique I found out today, we have a situation where the county is in charge of unincorporated places under state statute.
Hmm.
And they've been raising taxes on the unincorporated places. So if you raise taxes on an unincorporated place, I've looked at some of their finances. Their only revenue is going to be from the vehicles in that unincorporated place. That's a forest, basically, with five or six houses in it. Their only revenue is logging taxes. So the yield tax from logging. So paper companies own this land, or they go in and log, and they pay the town for the lumber. That, maybe $15,000, maybe not even that much. $2,500 in car registrations. That's the budget for the town. So if the county commissioners are going to start raising taxes on these places, they're only going to be split between 25 or 30 different residents. Their whole school tax in one place I was looking at, $16,000. So there's probably only one or two kids in the whole area.
Wow.
So you can't go saying, oh, look at this. This is untaxed. Let's whack these people just because you're a moonbat legislator and a county commissioner. Hey, we'll be back in a couple of minutes for after the New Hampshire Family Radio.